Welcome to Snart Chocolate, a show about ZK products, where we break them down with rich flavors and sweet insights. I'm Queenie, co-hosting with Omer, co-founder at Ingoyama. Today, we're excited to have Kitty, director at Rari Labs, join us to share how Zero Knowledge Proof is empowering privacy as a path to freedom. Hi, Kitty. It's great to have you on the show.
Hi, Queenie. Great to be here as well.
So first of all, would you like to introduce yourself and your role at Rari Labs?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm a director at Rari Labs, and Rari Labs is a contributor to the Rarimo protocol. Rarimo is a ZK identity protocol, and our goal is to inject privacy into a whole load of use cases where previously wasn't possible. So primarily into social use cases, where you need to prove maybe not just your identity, but also a history of your actions and your activity. And the reason we think this is so important is because one of the things that has always traditionally stopped privacy from scaling is the fact that it comes at the expense of social capital. So you might be able to, like, traditionally go private for kind of one-off interaction or go pseudonymous, but you can't testify or verify the history of your behavior, your networks, your accomplishments, anything like that. And that's just so limiting for the entire privacy space.
Great. So before we start talking about product and technology, I'm curious to hear, what was the starting point for your journey? Because Rarimo offers a very strong value proposition in privacy. So what inspired your team to pursue this direction?
Wow, I think, so it was something that evolved over time. And I think the current iteration that we're in, where we have this very fully evolved social graph, came out of our work on much more straightforward digital identity and using identity to go private. And perhaps you guys are already familiar with Freedom Tool, which is our anonymous voting solution. And that was born out of this kind of question around, like, what was the most powerful and impactful thing that we could apply anonymity for, like, where was there an urgent need globally, not even just in the crypto space, to really, really protect people from surveillance. And for us, the answer was voting. So we built out this this voting solution, Freedom Tool, that's now been deployed by MPs in Georgia, but also by opposition in Russia and Iran. And it was watching the rollout of that and observing how it was useful and how people engaged with it that really prompted us to expand the infrastructure into the social graph that you see today.
That's very ambitious vision. So you just mentioned that there are Rarimo protocol, Freedom Tool, the voting solution, and also the ZK social graph in the long term. So these three are the main products at Rari Labs currently. So what's the relationship between each other?
Yes, so I'm so glad that you asked this question because I think it can be very confusing. So the core product is Rarimo, which is, as I said, the ZK identity protocol. And Rarimo includes the social graph. So at the core of Rarimo is a ZK identity registry, where people can permissionlessly store their identities without any third-party attester. So maybe we can get into that later, but that's the kind of core building block of the protocol. And that's where you would store, for example, like passports passport hashes or national ID hashes, and use it to generate like proofs of citizenship. But the protocol is so much more than just the identity registry. It also supports like an entire ZK social graph. So this is where, instead of just storing your identifiers, like your passports, you're storing the history of your behaviors, your friendships, and it's all interlinked through a key pair. So that's the very like baseline product, is this protocol. And then Freedom Tool is a solution that sits on top of the protocol. So in Freedom Tool's case, it uses the ZK identity registry in particular to allow people to cast completely anonymous votes. So they scan in their passport by just like tapping the NFC chip, and the passport hash goes into this identity registry, and they can start generating proofs from that registry that allow them to perform completely untraceable actions. So you could use it for voting, or you could even use it for collecting an airdrop. And then on top of Freedom Tool, which is a solution, we have all these individual apps that use the solution. So we had Russia 2024, which is where Russian opposition came and built using the solution. We had United Space, which is where Georgian MPs came and launched an app for Georgian citizens in the run-up to their elections. So I would say it's like baseline is protocol, ZK identity protocol, then Freedom Tool on top, and then these apps on top of Freedom Tool. But Freedom Tool and the voting apps are also only like one of many, many verticals that we have building on top of the protocol. And we actually have a bunch of new like apps and products that are going to come out soon that like external teams are building. So like in particular, we've had people building prediction markets that use the identity system to improve the quality of the information that the prediction market produces. So for example, getting rid of bots and protecting the market from manipulation, but also using a more complex reputation system to allow people who have performed certain previous actions to vote in certain markets. You can segment it, stuff like that. We have experiments with social media, new forms of social media coming out. So yeah, it just kind of is a testament to how broad and far-reaching the use cases for the ZK identity protocol itself can be.
This is super helpful. Now I fully got the structure. So then would you like to extend a little bit on the key properties or the key components of Raramo protocol as a ZK-powered identity solution?
Yeah, for sure. So I think like in my last answer, I mentioned there's this ZK identity registry. And that is really like the kind of central piece of infrastructure in the protocol. So it, as I kind of mentioned, it allows people to self-issue their own identities. And this was a really novel breakthrough for the privacy space because like the pre-existing model for most identity frameworks is that a third party attester is verifying the uniqueness of the user. So there's always a point where like some of the user's data is being stored somewhere so that framework can confirm that the user isn't a duplicate. So like a really kind of like easy example might be say like Worldcoin, where they have to store like some information about the iris scan so that when someone else registers, they can make sure it's not like the same person registering again and again and again. And this was like the standard, this sort of like third party model, or third party attester. And we really wanted to get rid of that model and have a system that had like no issues whatsoever. And this was largely for privacy reasons, and that there's like all the kind of obvious risks that come with having third party issuers, but also kind of ideologically, this idea that the user should be like in control and have full ownership and say over their identities. So how it works is so we started it with passports, because like the beauty of passports is that because they've already been issued by a government, all you need to do is verify the data inside the passport. You don't need to reissue it. So this allowed us to get rid of the attester, and the user can just simply like confirm basically that they have a passport, that the passport's valid, that it exists. And what we do is we then publish like a hash from those passport keys like onto the identity registry, which is public. So like in a worst case scenario, even if someone got a hold of your passport, they would be able to tell that your passport has been registered, but they wouldn't be able to see like any of the activity that you're using that passport for. And the reason we call it like a privacy as network effect is that the more users and the more applications that are on the network, the more difficult it becomes to figure out what the passports on that network are doing. So if you just had like one singular app, it might become like pretty easy. You could be like, okay, if, you know, this person must have done it for that. But because there's such a range of different use cases, that's what really adds this like plausible deniability. And if I can just like sort of like shamelessly like shill for a moment, anytime anyone uses any of our apps, like even if it's for something relatively innocuous, they are helping protect the people who are using our apps for much more like high risk use cases, like perhaps like voting in a regime. So aside from just the fact that Rambo supports all these like fun and cool applications, every time you use it, you're kind of doing, you're performing like a social good, and you're becoming part of the plausible deniability for other users on the app.
I think you touched upon one of the key properties that's Freedom Tool guarantees, that's its uniqueness just now. And there are another other two, eligibility and also anonymity. So why are these properties indispensable, and what challenges arise when trying to achieve them simultaneously?
This is a great question. So, basically, one of the reasons that voting hasn't existed in, you know, that you don't really have like digital voting, is because it's like very, very difficult to confirm that someone is who they say they are without compromising their anonymity. So like if you had if you proved that someone was unique and eligible, it was really, really difficult to keep them truly anonymous. And then as soon as you pre you know had they were anonymous and unique, anyway, you like get the picture. Like Freedom Tool in particular was one of the first systems that really did this. Uniqueness was like the really tricky bit. Like that's the thing that's like really, really hard to overcome, because it's like you can scan someone's passport and prove they're a citizen. And that's your kind of like eligibility test. But if you want to make sure that they're not like doing duplicates and that it's not multiple people are voting again and again and again, it's really, really tricky to do that without like storing the data somewhere. And so that was where we came up eventually with this like identity as a network effect solution, where the uniqueness has been like published on chain, but you can't trace exactly how the user is behaving. But before we did that, so this is kind of like version two of Freedom Tool, this ZK identity registry. Before we did that, we had like a different system where we kind of tackled this like triad of like uniqueness, eligibility, and anonymity, where we realized like the big risk was that if you built out this secure voting system, what if a government like got a hold of someone's passport and they scanned it and the passport either like registered or couldn't register? And if it couldn't register because it was already in the system somehow, like would the government then be able to like persecute the user, because they know that the only thing they could possibly be doing with this passport is voting, and like perhaps an alternative voting system if you're operating in a regime. Obviously, if you're not, this isn't a problem. So back then we created the solution where no matter how many times, no matter whether or not you'd already been registered, the system would still allow you to re-register, re-register, and re-register, and then we just remove duplicate votes like from the final count. So that system was like very good and very robust, but we felt it did have a third party attester, and we wanted to move like beyond a third party attester and get the privacy levels and the anonymity guarantees like as high as possible. Like that was the priority for us, and that's when we switched over to this ZK identity registry model. So it was all a kind of big it was all like a mechanism for overcoming like the really, really big challenge of uniqueness, I would say. Like that's the kind of most challenging part of any digital identity system.
Kitty, can you walk us through the user experience? Although it's audio only, just so that we'll understand better how users are interacting with the Freedom Tool.
Yeah, for sure. So, again, I'm really glad that you asked that question because our user experience is great. So it's really, really easy to use. Like you literally just, it depends a little bit on how the specific app's been designed, what interface you see when you log on, but the process will always be the same, where you literally just like get out your passport or your national ID. And you hold it against your phone, and your phone can detect the NFC chip inside of the passport. So an NFC chip, if for people don't know, is this like chip that stores like some of the data inside the passport, and it's what's used for like biometric scanning. But you detect the chip, and just like all on the back end, the data inside that chip is verified. And you also scan in, you use your like the camera in your phone to scan just like the inside passport photo as well, because these two things are needed to be linked for verification. And like all the kind of complicated stuff I was describing happens in the back end, but you just receive like an anonymous voting pass that you can just straight away use to start casting votes. So for most users of Freedom Tool, very uniquely, have not been Web3 users. They've been like normal everyday people who didn't even realize that like blockchain or crypto was being used, and it was like fast and like simple enough for it to have like widespread adoption with just like non-crypto native like normal people.
I see. Yeah. It sounds super intuitive for non-crypto people. I'm wondering if there is any specific or special challenges due to the fact you are using like ZK blockchain and stuff like this that makes it different than the user experience of just like doing a KYC plus some kind of like operation like voting or something.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think like so there was quite a couple of challenges. Like I'd say the biggest challenges are like social challenges. Because especially if you're operating in like a very high risk environment, like in Russia, where people, can face like 7-year prison sentences for doing things that can be interpreted as like a protest, the trust in the technology has to be like unbelievably high. And so when you're using like a novel technology like zero knowledge, it takes a long time to really get people to trust that this technology like is as secure as we are saying it is. And so when, for example, the Russian app like first launched, we were not expecting it to be like the entirety of the Russian dissident population would engage with it because there's that trust barrier still. So the first vote had like great engagement. There was over 40,000 votes. But which for Web3 is very, very good, but we knew that like the general population was still afraid. And it's something that we hope will like build over time, that as people see that the tech like continues to exist and survives, and it did get attacked a lot, and it survived all of these attacks, and we hope that as people see that, they'll continue to like come back and use the trust. But yeah, there's that kind of, sorry, not use the trust, use the app, but yeah, there's that like trust barrier with ZK being like such a new technology. There's also, I remembered one funny thing about the user experience, which is the only passport that creates like a slightly more difficult user experience is the US passport, because they put their chips in like a really weird place in the back of the passport. So it sometimes takes American users like a while to like find the chip if they're using the passport. So if you're an American and you're listening to this and you haven't been able to scan your passport, try the back of the passport.
I'm curious, like, did the user pay for the cost? For example, like maybe the ZK proof is generated when they upload their personal information. Do they need to
Yeah,
pay?
no, they didn't. No, they don't. So all of
Okay.
these were like completely free, and Freedom Tool is like a public good. But also I would like emphasize, like, because we are talking a lot about the voting use case, which is obviously really cool, but passport ZKPs can be used for so many different verticals and types of verification. So we're also working a lot on using the Passport CKPs for airdrops and just kind of more traditional proofs of humanity. And we hope that projects will start to use them more and more, not just because they're such a robust form of anti-civil resistance, but also because of what I was saying earlier, where like if you decide to use rare earth passport CKPs as part of your anti-civil resistance, you're protecting everybody on the network.
Yeah, that's really cool. So I feel it's a very interesting journey that you kind of like compare like different solutions and also showed us the involvement how this tech like ZK or some other approaches help to make privacy a better tool for the users. So I'm curious, like, do you think the current version of Rarimo is already like good enough, or there are still some dimensions or properties you think it will continue to evolve or iterate on?
Yeah, so I would say, like, I think from a privacy perspective, the protocol is like unbelievably robust, and that's something that like the community is like very, very proud of. And for the reasons I was mentioning earlier, like, we're the only framework that is permissionless and gets rid of this third party attester problem. But I think, like, as the ecosystem continues to expand, we'll definitely discover like little obstacles, perhaps not so much in the privacy areas, but maybe I think it will be less technical, but be more like questions around like what types of identities you want to use to support different types of filters or different types of social applications. So like one of the really interesting things that Rarimo and social graphs and just like ZKs generally can be used for is filters, where you're like, we're only giving this experience or like access to this space to people who can verify that they have done X, Y, and Z. Like, a kind of voting is like a basic example where you're gating it only to citizens of a particular country. Airdrops, you're gating it only to people who have done like X community things. And I think as we allow people to apply like more and more niche filters, there'll be a kind of process of figuring out like what types of filters actually work and keeping the pools like large enough to still be accessible without making them so large that they're like overly diluted. So I think actually a lot of it will be like the game theory of how you build on the protocol that will take more like A/B testing. And I think it's going to be like a really fascinating process to like watch and discover that and how it works.
But is the protocol now fully censorship-free, trustless, and decentralized, or are there still
Yes.
some training wheels? Yeah.
No, if the whole protocol is like completely decentralized,
Oh,
which
nice.
is really cool. No, it's
Yeah.
really like, and that's why I keep like being like the ZK Identity Registry,
It's
just being like,
ready.
it's ready. Like, guys, use it. It's fully private.
Oh my God, that's super exciting.
Thank
Yeah,
you so
cool.
much. Yeah.
Yeah, and you also already mentioned several use cases, the applications. I think that's why I feel super excited about this episode, because I feel it's not just because Rarimo brings fantastic technology and tools, but also because it unveils new possibilities for individuals to make their voices heard and contribute to society without sacrificing privacy. Because, I come from a country where public voting has never been a part of my life. So seeing the use cases you've just shared is truly, mind-blowing to me. So would you like to share more details?
Well, no, I was just gonna say, like, thank you so much, because that is like exactly how we want people to like see Rarimo like as a technology and like as an ecosystem. And I think like sometimes in this industry, it's easy to like rabbit hole into the tech and lose sight of like what that tech can actually be used for and like why it's important. And we like built this, or we helped contribute like to this protocol, because we like straight away could see like how impactful it can be and how many like very urgent use cases there are. And I think one thing I would emphasize is that like this need, it's not just from the political realm, it's also in more like frivolous use cases. So I think like Rarimo will make a lot of online experiences just a lot more fun and a lot more easier to connect. Like, I'm really interested in the experiments that we have with builders creating new types of social media on top of the protocol, and how like humans will be able to interact a little bit differently when like A, they know that they're not being surveilled, but B, when they can really like customize their experiences and who they're connecting with and what they're connecting over, which is that capacity of the ZK that I referenced earlier. So there's one social media app that like I don't talk about too much because it's still the details have been like worked out, so it might change like by the time this podcast comes out or by the time it's launched. But it's basically really experimenting with what shows up in the feed of your social media and who you connect with, and it's kind of specifically designed to foster like civic conversation. So I think the internet at the moment, like a lot of people are exhausted by it and they find it like a pretty like overstimulating and often like low discourse place, and these tools can really change that. And even the prediction market, like I mentioned, we've got a prediction market coming out. Like that's a whole new type of with the identity added in or injected into the prediction market, becomes a whole new type of way of measuring sentiment that's going to be really interesting. And how can this market produce like better info, and can it become like a feedback loop where I don't know, say like a project launches a prediction market where they might be able to get like better information than they could have previously. So I'm really excited about all the stuff we have coming up, and I'm really grateful that you guys gave me the chance to talk about it. So thank you.
It's our pleasure.
Kitty, can you share more about this like prediction market application? I'm curious how it's gonna work or what's the advantage, because you have this like way of doing identity management in a better, like more private way.
Yeah, for sure. So there's actually been like two prediction markets on top of Rarimo. So the first one launched like yesterday, and it was a response to the voting app in Georgia. So we had this app that lets people register their ID, and then they can do not just like anonymous polling, but a whole load of different like civic activities. And it was a really interesting use case where the government decided to reward people for like voting, reporting election fraud, and build up like a reputation system in the app and kind of incentivize them. So then like a group of Georgian devs did like a spin-off, but they did a prediction market where to participate in the market, you have to A, verify that you're a Georgian citizen, and B, like prove that you've been politically active. So the fact that this market alone is like gated to a particular type of person is interesting, but also there's no sibils. So like it's very, very hard to manipulate the outcomes in the market, because it's, like every single person's anonymous, but they're verified. So that's just like one example. And then there's another prediction market coming out, which is hopefully I can talk about this. I think it's going to come out before this podcast. So if not, we can just cut it. But that prediction market is called Opinion, and it's specifically for Web3. It's a Web3 market. So like all of the markets will relate to like what do you think is going to happen in this ecosystem, what do you think of this update, blah 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 blah, and people will vote on it. And eventually companies will be able to also like distribute tokens like through the market. But the thing that's so valuable about it is not just the anti-Sybil thing, but users will be building reputation systems inside the market. So showing how accurate their predictions were, how accurately like these individuals were able to foresee market events, showing which like communities they're most interested in support, how influential they are like within the market. So you'll be able to see if like one individual is kind of like inspiring movements, because there's also very well-developed like comment system and almost like a spin-off kind of social media properties that most prediction markets don't have, where the users are like chatting and discussing the prediction markets. So you can imagine kind of like why that would be useful for projects to see and perhaps like harness those community leaders, but also for them to really, really dissect where, who is pushing which sentiments, where they're coming from, and just sort of get like another type, a newer, like more granular type of feedback.
I feel a prediction market is a very, it's like a variant of voting system.
So yes.
It's really natural. It's really natural.
Yeah, completely. And I really felt that too, where I think like voting is really interesting because it allows people to express like what they want to happen, but a prediction market allows people to express what they think will happen, and the two can be very, very different. And then they often start like influencing each other back and forth. So I think like breaking up those sentiments and channeling them through different outlets is really useful.
That's
and cool. I think I love what you said about it being like a type of voting, because I think about this a lot. Like if we expand our understanding of what a vote is, like,
yeah,
or yeah. And like, I don't know if you saw like Vitalik gave a talk on this at, I can't remember which event, but like, can we think of like Twitter likes as a type of voting, and people are constantly trying to register their support. And if we have better tools for recognizing where that support lies and what people think, we can create a much more democratic community.
Yeah, so I have a personal opinion that actually every activity you have on social media is also a kind of voting.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, so it's possible we can think about more like voting, like new use cases that can be supported by Rarimo.
Well, honestly, if you think of something, like let us know, and like we will always try like help people build it. Like we really like, and I'd actually say this for like any listener, like anyone who has an idea, anyone who is interested in voting and reputations and like sentiment gathering and expression, like we will help you build.
So, if I get an idea, I would just join your hackathon.
Great. Well, if you're really interested in it, you know, I mentioned like we have this new type of social media coming up that centers much more closely on that idea as like social media expression as a type of voting. So I can just share some of the stuff around that if it's like a topic you're interested in.
Ooh, can't wait to see, you know, when it gets to life. Yeah. So Kitty, I still want to hear more stories behind the success of the, you know, the applications, the United Space app, Russia 2024. So how did you collaborate with the different parties to bring them to life?
Yeah, so the first implementation of Freedom Tool was Russia 2024, which was our use case in Russia. And we can't talk too much about how that app was born for security reasons. So it was launched by this guy called Mark Fagan, who is the former Pussy Riot lawyer, and he's an exile. And so there's obviously we have very high kind of security measures around that. But it was that use case then really kick-started the other use cases, I would say. And we're quite aggressive, like as a team, I'd say, with like approaching people and being like, you should use this and And once we had that use case in Russia, it made it much easier for us to like go out and be like, look, this thing works, because it survived like several attacks from the Kremlin. And that was like just amazing marketing for us to be able to say like, look, you really can trust this, and it is really robust because it's like withstood a rollout in Russia. But yeah, so we had after Russia there was Iran, and that was actually like the kickstarted by Twitter, because Amin Soleimani, who runs one of the NGOs that built that, had tweeted, being like, does anyone know like voting solutions or like stuff that actually works? And we'd been like, yeah, us. and then the Georgian use case with Georgian MPs. I can't talk like too much about that. But yeah, that was the third one. And then we've actually got another jurisdiction coming up too, that hopefully we'll announce like relatively soon. But I think, yeah, if talking about like behind the scenes, like the thing about Freedom Tour that was like really moving is that it had contributions from all over the world. So once we started working on it and word got out in the cryptography community, we had so many cryptographers either contribute code or audit it and help make sure it was like completely robust. And a lot of these cryptographers were working in regimes themselves and took like enormous risks to contribute to it. And it was this really beautiful, like horizontal collaborative effort. And like so many people like deserve recognition that they'll never get because it had to be done like so anonymously. And I think like our own devs as well, you know, like we're based in Kiev and they built Freedom Tool in wartime conditions. They built RAMMO, the whole thing, or you know, all their contributions to RAMMO have been done in wartime conditions. And just like the level of dedication and like bravery and passion that went into the tool were really staggering. And I also think that is something that contributed to its success, like not just that the actual tool was successful, but all the teams and the people that worked on it were so like pure in their vision and really did just want to build this to try and make like a more democratic and fairer world. And we viewed Freedom Tool to some extent as defense technology, because we really believed that if you can increase democracy within a country and give people freedom of expression, you can prevent the authoritarianism that leads to so many atrocities. So it was so I feel like I've rambled a bit, but it was, yeah, I think that was a big part of the success of the rollout, was like the vision and the like passion and how that impacted the parties that ended up building.
Yeah, so I know like the journey should be like very challenging, like, yeah. So and also there has always been tension between governments or regulators and the privacy service providers. So how is RAMMO addressing this challenge? And do you have any advice for builders who are navigating this space?
Yeah, okay, so like my number one piece of advice would be like, don't touch KYC. So there's this like big, oh my God, it actually drives me like insane. So there's this like myth in the industry that like they're gonna be like ZK solutions for KYC. And there never will be, because like, or perhaps they will be, but the ZK will become completely like useless, because even if you technically build the solution, there are legal requirements in KYC about how the data is stored that means that like the government has to be able to review the people. And so you can't have that data be like anonymous and then just like verified. And it's like a complete dead end. And yet it's still a conversation that I see happening in like so many corners where people are like, yeah, like ZK KYC solutions. And it's a real developer's trap. So like RAMMO, the community, like we think a lot about verification and lots of instances where you would want to verify some of the same information that you might use for KYC, so like your age or like voting or whatever, but we don't touch or like build on KYC like at all, because like the regulation does not exist for you to allow you to have that level of privacy. Like it won't be legally implementable. So that is my biggest advice.
Yeah. That's a very interesting take. Okay, cool. So, before we wrap up today's conversations with our last question, Omar, do you have any add-on questions?
No, I just want to say how incredible this journey is, at least as someone viewing it from the sidelines at this point. I have to say that for me, all of this concept of using ZK for privacy and empowering users, I felt empowered first time I used Zcash, Monero. And I think this is like, identity might be like the way to actually reach mainstream with these privacy tools. So yeah, good luck, Kitty, on this journey. Sounds really exciting.
Guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate the platform and the support that you guys have shown to the project. And it's really like meaningful to hear all of that. And and it helps us grow. So thank you so much for the time and for inviting me on.
Thanks, Kitty. But it's not time to say goodbye yet. So we have one last question. It's a routine question that we ask
We'll also
every guest. Name a project that you are bullish about.
Do you guys know Cursive?
Oh.
So I don't even know exactly how to define them. I think they're kind of like an experimental like lab. And I just watched a talk that they gave at ZK Summit on cryptography for human connection. And it was all about how to use like different types of cryptography, like ZKs, but also like MPC to create apps that allow us to just like connect more intimately and sort of like combat loneliness. And they've run some like quite small but like cool experiments, like giving users to different events like little cards with like NFC chips in them that they can like tap to start building out like networks from like real life events that they can sort of just sort of like store the network. And then like I haven't looked closely enough at that infrastructure, but I already when I saw that was really excited about like, okay, well then what could you build on top of the network? But yeah, I just think kind of the way they think about cryptography is like amazing. I'm really like fangirling them at the moment. And they're more of like an ideas project from what I can see, like than like building a protocol or anything like that. But yeah, they're really, really cool, and I would recommend people check them out.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There is a Telegram group, by the way, if anyone wants to follow closely on them. We also invited them to the podcast. Hope that
Oh, sick.
they can come soon to also present what they've been up to.
Yeah, and I'm also, I should say, like, I'm almost scared I've misrepresented them with my description because I haven't deep dived. I like watched that talk and my mind was blown. I was like, oh my God, coolest thing ever. So, like, Cursive guys, you're great. And if I've misdescribed you, I'm sorry.
Great.
Okay.
All right. I guess that's all for today. So,
Great. Well,
thanks,
thank you,
Kitty, for joining
guys.
us. I
Thank you.
really,
Thank
really
you.
got inspired, yeah, and learned a lot, yeah. So can't
Well,
wait to witness more innovations that
thank you.
you guys are going to build. Yeah.
I really loved the conversation. Like you guys asked like really interesting questions, and you can tell you guys thought so deeply about it before the interview, and that was really like nice and fun. So thank you for like a great chat.
Thank you.